the people are here for nonsense.
Well, she's having none of that.
Stop showing us your little nun. How rude.
Are you not allowed to show your little nun on YouTube anymore?
Oh no, there's turbulence ahead. Sister Joan. Oh, what a surprise to see you here.
Me and Joan were here on time. Isn't that right, Joan of Arc?
She's a shady one, that Sister Joan.
Maybe she wouldn't be so shady if she wasn't left waiting all the time.
You know, I take 2 hours to do my face.
Get out of here, Joan. This isn't your show.
Hello, I'm Sister Babushka.
And I'm Sister Alaskalot.
And this is Utter Nonsense.
This is the show where we pour ourselves a lovely cup of tea.
And utter whatever nonsense pops into our heads.
This is basically a laid-back chat between friends, and you get to watch.
And new episodes are put out at the start of every new month.
I want a squeaky seat, so if you hear the occasional, just know it's the chair.
So, Alaska, last episode we were talking about diversity in drag, and I think there's an elephant in the room that we're going to look at today that everyone was probably expecting us to talk more about last time, which is obviously RuPaul's Drag Race.
There's an elephant in the room? Oh, there it is. It's Ru. It's RuPaul's Drag Race. Is that better? Too much shade. So, yeah, following on from last episode, it made sense to kind of delve into the world of RuPaul's Drag Race in more depth and just kind of share our thoughts on lots of different aspects.
So some of the stuff that we'll look at today are obviously how Drag Race has impacted the general public's perception of drag and the art that it is, but also looking at some of our favourite queens and seasons over the years, and also looking at some of the less favourable parts of the shows, which I'm sure we'll have a lot of opinions on as well, and also taking a look at the judges that they've had over the time, and especially Mama Ru.
I mean, essentially, we have a lot of opinions, and we want to share them. So, get your tea ready. It's going to be spilling everywhere.
Such a waste of tea. Just drink it.
You can always lick it up.
Not on these floors, honey. Alaska, you nasty girl.
It's what the people want.
Save it for only nuns.
And if you haven't heard, we're going to start up our own Only Nuns channel where you can follow us for all the darts. It's going to get real dirty.
Filthy, filthy makeup brushes galore.
All the glitter that's embedded into our carpets.
And you don't want to see the sponges once they wipe this face off.
Oh, and the ratchet looking face once you've tried to take off the makeup, but half of it's still stained on your face. Dirty, dirty, dirty.
So subscribe now for $7.99 a month.
Where were we? Oh, yes. For anyone who doesn't know, we are drag nuns, members of the Order of Perpetual Indulgence, and we have just a little bit of an interest in the drag community.
And we're actually recording this on a very special day, because today is actually the Order's 42nd birthday.
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday, drag nuns. Happy birthday to us.
Ah. Where's my cake?
I mean, you can't have it and eat it. Pick one or the other.
Fine.
Besides, I thought you had some nice donuts.
Ooh, true. Vegan donuts.
Surely you prefer whole to cake.
I plead the fifth and will not answer.
I'm going to be a very bad nun today. I'm sorry.
No wonder Joan of Arc came along. She knew what filth you were going to get up to.
It was 42 years ago today that the very first sisters donned their habits and hit the streets of San Francisco.
And we've been spreading joy and serving the LGBTQ plus community ever since.
Here's to another 42 years. Also, as one of the brothers in our house said, this essentially makes us the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
But only for this year.
So enjoy it while it lasts.
I would like to think in 42 years' time, my makeup skills will improve slightly. So, Alaska, I have a question. What do you think the impact on with fuck?
Well, I think fuck has a major impact on every single country, every single race. It's what's kept us going to this day. Our very survival depends on fuck. Did I get the question right? Do I win?
10 points to Slytherin. Yes, you win. So, Alaska, I have another question. What do you think the impact has been with RuPaul's Drag Race and how that has brought the art of drag to the public's fuller awareness?
RuPaul's Drag Race? Let me think. Oh, you're talking about that RuPaul's Drag Race? Yeah, I think everyone's heard of that. I mean, clearly, it is an absolute juggernaut of the drag world. It's had such an impact across every type of drag in every country. Everyone who's into drag, or even everyone who's not, has seen something of RuPaul's Drag Race at this point. Just mahoosive impact. Mahoosive.
It's definitely been one of those cultural touchstones, I think, for a lot of people at some point learning about drag, even if they're not doing it themselves. So, yeah, huge. And it has had, you know, a really positive impact in that it's really brought drag to the mainstream sort of forefront and really catapulted that in public perception, because I'm sure we've all grown up with drag in our own parts of the world in various ways, mostly in the cities, but now it's something that's globally recognized and talked about, and it's not just seen as something that, oh yeah, that one person in town that does like the dressing up and that and the weird makeup and stuff, but it's actually recognized as the art form that it is. In part thanks to Drag Race, not solely because of that, but it has been a big part.
Yeah, I mean, drag as an art form has existed for a long time now. And, you know, the kind of public awareness of it has kind of grown and shrunk a few times, I think, over the years, over the decades. And there have been some big names. I mean, in the UK, we've had some big names who've become household names long before Drag Race was a thing. When you think of people like Lily Savage, and I was watching a documentary on them just the other day.
Clearly not that big a name then.
I think they passed away before either of us were alive, but in their day, like, they became so big, they became a household name, and then they ended up losing all their money and trying to go back to drag in order to keep themselves going, but they were never as popular again because the interest had just completely died away by that point. Oh, I wish I could remember the name. Danny LaRue.
Oh!
Danny LaRue was another, you know, UK drag icon that became absolutely massive. So clearly, you know, drag has had heydays in the past, and then it's kind of waned away again. And so I think RuPaul's Drag Race has been the kind of latest iteration where it's been not just a single queen and not just a single country. This has been a universal, global, catapulting drag well and truly into the mainstream and into the limelight, and has affected drag communities across the world.
Yeah, because there will have been sort of local legends or regional sort of celebrities that were drag artists. But yeah, I think it definitely feels like everyone or a lot of people around the world globally are now really keyed into more international players on that outfield as well.
Yeah, particularly in mainstream media. So this is not just, you know, live performances on the stage. This is on your TV sets. And in the UK, we're talking about on the BBC. I mean, that's pretty mainstream.
Well, BBC, and yeah, like the fact that we've also got other drag shows that are happening on other channels as well. So it's not just confined to one channel even. It's, you know, across different channels as well. So as well as you can see it in your local pub, in the concert hall, wherever you're going across the country, you can also catch it on multiple channels just in your front living room. Front living room. God, I sound so middle class.
So clearly, I mean, Drag Race has had an undeniably huge impact. And, you know, the real positive side to this is that drag is now so much more visible and accessible to people. So, you know, people are getting to see shows, whereas before they might not have even known it existed. More people are getting into drag as a result, and we're seeing lots of amazing drag artists coming to the fore and really upping the game for everyone as well. So there are some real benefits to the visibility that Drag Race has brought.
Yeah, and the fact that you'll even be able to see people and learn about their journey, wherever that is in the LGBTQ plus community, and having someone that might not have readily been available as a sort of icon growing up, if you'd been born maybe a couple of decades earlier, that it now gives you someone also to sort of look up and go, oh, I recognize that person, I recognize me in that person. Especially when I've especially felt that when we've been able to witness sort of non-binary queens and people talking about those experiences, because it's something that's still not touched upon in quite a lot of mainstream media, but in drag it's a lot more open, and that's been really good to see that platformed as well.
Mm-hmm. And as we talked about last time, there are still areas of the drag community that are still part of an underground subculture, essentially, because they are not part of this revolution of drag. So when you think about, you know, drag artists who are drag kings, or they're non-binary drag artists, or, you know, they do something that's just so weird and different, a lot of that isn't seen on mainstream media. You still have to go seek out those live performances to see it, but I'm hoping that their time will come, you know, as drag as a whole becomes more visible, that they will also get their chance. So while there have undeniably been positives to Drag Race and what it's done for the drag community, there are some, I could say, controversies that are in there as well. It's come with its fair share.
Yeah, there's definitely been problematic things coming up. I mean, for anything that's been sort of running for 13 seasons, you know, there's obviously, that's a long span of time in which some of these less than great things being included just shouldn't have been included at all. And I suppose some of it is, there will always be a learning curve. And I'm hoping that some of it has, you know, as we're going to touch on some of these controversies in a second, I'm hoping that some of these weren't maybe intentional, but more around the fact that there was still education to be done with producers and showrunners. And so that some of these things, such as the use of slurs, the treatment of queens and various other things that we're going to touch on, you know, I hope that none of these have been done with the intention of causing harm, but I know that some of these just shouldn't have been done anyway.
So should we start by chatting about some of the slurs that have been included in the show? And I honestly, I don't know whether it was done, hosts and the creators have certain prejudices, or if it's because they're of a certain generation and didn't realise, because, you know, language changes and sensitivities change. So I don't know how it ended up being included, but there were, you know, different slurs, different transphobic language in many ways that was included in different parts of the show. And if you go back and watch the earliest seasons, like the very first ones, they stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, I remember sort of when I first started watching Drag Race, there'd already been like 3 or 4 seasons, and just like binging that weekend and going, oh, that, okay, they're going to say that every time they've got like a notification from Rue. That's a really interesting inclusion, you know. And it's not until, I suppose, on the first episode that I watched, I wasn't necessarily picking up, but the more, because I was binge watching it, maybe it was just like hearing that again, I was like, I'm not sure if that's mostly appropriate to be using. But again, I'm not the same generation as Rue and the showrunners, so yeah, as you were mentioning, Alaska, it could be generational. But yeah, the use of slurs so openly on a TV show that was so popular was interesting. It's always interesting when you go back and watch media several years after it's been made and catch these things as well.
Do we want to name them for the sake of education?
Yeah, I think it's probably worth naming them so that people know that it's not appropriate these days to use that.
Yeah, because the one that really stands out to me that you've mentioned is when they get a notification in the workroom and it says, ooh, you've got shemail. And that term is so, it just gives me the bulk. And they also, like, I remember that there was a mini challenge called female or shemail, which again is just, oh, I mean, there's several things wrong with that one. it's so inappropriate, and to think it wasn't used just once, but it was used multiple times, and no one saw a problem with it in the show for quite a long time until, you know, there was a media uproar and they went, oh yeah, we should probably change that.
Yeah, that's it's just such an odd thing to think, oh, that sounds really appropriate to be using. And yeah, even just for the fact it's every episode hitting the same sort of notification, but then also to use it in a challenge, you just wonder what the fuck some people were thinking in the writing room when they thought, yeah, that sounds like a great idea, let's do that.
Yeah, and even recently, Rue used to have a line where she said, gentlemen, start your engines and may the best woman win. And recently they've changed that to may the best queen win. Because again, you know, trying to get away from such gendered language, but I don't think they've succeeded terribly. They've changed, you know, some of the language has changed, but I think there's still a ways to go in order for it to be more accessible. We talked about this a whole lot in our last episode. If you've not seen it, you should go check it out, where we were talking about gender diversity in drag. And the language that comes with RuPaul's Drag Race, I think, very much plays into that.
Definitely. And yeah, it is something that on watching the latest season, it's been quite noticeable, because after years of hearing may the best woman win, I can now clock that, oh, they are saying may the best drag queen and may the best queen win, which is more inclusive. But again, like you were mentioning that we've talked about previously, it's still may the best queen win. And until we start opening up and giving a more broad spectrum of drag and having drag queens and kings and, you know, neither kings nor queens showing up, you know, I think there is still a way it could be more inclusive, but I suppose that also depends upon who they are having presenting in the show and, yeah, the format that they want to take the overall show with, if they want to keep it specific to drag queens, which also feels quite exclusionary in a way.
Yeah, and drag queens that fit a certain mould as well, because I'm sure there's been at least one contestant that used like a beard as part of a look, and they were totally dragged for it. I mean, seriously. And I love bearded queens. Like, the whole point of drag is to fuck with gender expectations. And so trying to cram it into this little box of, you know, you must look as fishy as possible is just, oh.
And touching on that, like, the fact that there have been, like, the first time in the Snatch game or on the runway when one of the contestants was sort of thinking outside the box and going, yes, I'm actually going to perform as this male person. You know, remembering the first time, how much the judges reacted against that and was like, well, that's not what we want to see. That's not what we're here for. You know, this look doesn't work. You didn't pull it off, or whatever the sort of plethora of critiques were at the time. But now when you see it and you have two or three contestants playing on Snatch Game where throughout the runway looks and people are like, yes, that worked. You really embodied that character. You pulled that off in drag. And it's just seeing that change that because they were so against it before, but people have continued to bring that as a way of gender fuckery with their drag. And they've been really good at doing that. It's shown the judges that, yeah, you don't need to be the fishiest queen possible. You don't always have to play the female presenting character, but you can actually have more diversity and you actually get some really good performances when you stop restricting people into that box just for the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to their credit, I mean, they definitely have improved. On the first season of UK Drag Race in Snatch Game, they had a contestant who did Donald Trump, for example, which is a male character. They did it really well. It was hilarious. So it is nice to see that that is becoming more accepted. But yeah, there's still a long way to go, I think, in terms of opening up the stage for more drag artists.
Definitely. And another controversy or, you know, problematic area that I'm aware of anyway is how some of the queens and how some of the performers, you know, during their time on Drag Race, how they have felt they've been treated by the judges, but also how that comes across in the editing and how the fan community reacts to that as well. You know, where queens have felt they're pressured into acting a certain way or hiding parts of themselves from their fellow contestants and their judges. Again, more in the earlier episodes, I feel, than recent episodes where you'll have a lot of people talking about their experiences of being non-binary, being, you know, trans, and sort of bringing those topics. But some of the early seasons where it would be a case of when you had the reunion episode that was filmed like after the winner had been announced in that, and you'd come back and it would actually be like, this queen has decided to transition, and it was something they actually really felt, but they felt they couldn't talk about it during Drag Race because then Rue and others might judge them less favorably or not even let them on the show. Again, that sort of gatekeeping of what drag is and not allowing certain people who don't present in a certain way or don't feel they fit into a certain mold being excluded from that or having to hide themselves just so they can get a chance to compete has been welcoming to see that change over the years. But again, it's something that when you look back at those earlier seasons, it's something that can be quite cringeworthy in a sense, I feel.
I do think though that the editing of the show can do people really dirty sometimes. At the end of the day, Drag Race is about entertainment. They want you to be entertained. And that means that the editing is going to be done in order to maximize the entertainment value of what you're watching. So I do think that, you know, people will be fed questions to spark a discussion, you know, backstage and get those moments where, you know, people are clashing against each other. In the kind of the confessionals, the video confessionals, I do know that there's a lot of editing goes on there because they basically ask them to wear the same outfit every single time so that they can take snippets from across the season and stick it against whatever they want. So the comment wasn't necessarily made in reference to what you're seeing. The editors have put it there. So it's, yeah, what you're seeing is not what really happens. They are creating a story.
Yeah, and I remember that there was specifically one queen that was really vocal about that from their time, and I think, was it Fifi O'Hara? From sort of the earlier seasons, and I think from the editing, they got done really dirty, and it was a case of, like, they were basically portrayed as the villain of that season.
I think that's happened more than once. There's been more than one queen who said that happened to them. Yeah. I'm trying to think. There's another one that's in my head. They also came out as trans after filming. And she said that she had been made out to be the villain. She came back on All Stars, did she?
I know Fifi did, and that's why that
Gia Gunn.
Yes.
Gia Gunn said that the editors did her really dirty, that she was made out to be something that she wasn't. Of course, we'll never know how true this is. There's always two sides to every story, but she definitely said that the editors had portrayed her in ways that just weren't accurate at all.
I suppose that's the problem with any sort of reality TV is, you know, as they say in the show, it's all about the game and, you know, it's not RuPaul's best friend race and all that. So I suppose part of it is for us to be more objective viewers in the sense that we shouldn't take everything that's on there as gospel.
Do you know what? Like, I would love to have a show called Best Friend Race. I would do that show. It's all going to be fluffy bunnies, glitter and sparkles. Everyone's going to be happy. Everyone wins. That's a boring show. No one is going to commission that show.
I mean, I win, though, right? I win.
Right? You'd win. Just don't tell Sister Joan of Arc. I can't take her angry face. So yeah, while we've talked about the kind of different ways that queens are represented, positives and not so positive aspects of the show, one of the big things really is Rue herself. And I don't know how much of an influence Rue has on the way people are presented on the show itself, but we're led to think that Rue is quite an instrumental driving force behind the whole thing. And there's some issues there too. Some things that make me feel a bit uncomfortable, just a bit. Ugh. So I've brought my tea and now it's time for the shades. Can we talk about Rue's face, first of all? I mean, okay, no shade. It is kind of shade. If you've gone back and watched previous seasons of Drag Race, you may have noticed a change in Rue's makeup. Does Rue do her own makeup for the show? The answer is no. No. So for a long, long time, Rue had like a dedicated makeup artist that would do their face. They stuck with them for ages until season 8, and they quit like that. No one quite knows why, whether it was a falling out, who knows, but it was quite sudden. And this meant that on the very first episode of season 9, Rue did not appear in drag. It's the only episode where they've been judging and Rue was not in drag. Because there was no one to do her face, because she doesn't do it herself. Then in the second episode of season 9, she did come out in drag, but man, that face was beat up. I mean, that was just... that was like something you would see from Willem. You need to blend, girl. And then after that, it got spectacularly better. Because Rue hired a new makeup artist, someone who was a previous contestant on the show, does Rue's face. She gets another queen to do her face. My theory is that Rue doesn't know how to do the modern style of drag makeup because it has changed. And Rue has been around for a long, long time. So I think Rue came to the fore with a different style of makeup as a club kid back in the, what was it, 80s, 90s. It's a different face. What the face you're seeing today, I don't know if she's ever learned how to do it. And do you remember at the end of season 12, when everyone was in lockdown and we had like the last couple of episodes, the reunion and stuff, again, didn't do her own face because she didn't have anyone to do it. In fact, not only did she not do her own face, but she wore like some kind of weird fucking gimp mask. What the fuck was that?
Horrible thing ever to watch on that episode.
It was bad enough having it for one episode, but then in the next one, the very last episode, did it again. I'm like, at least come with your normal face. Like, what is this? And if you're thinking it's protecting you from COVID, it's not. Like, the only bits we could see were your nose and your mouth. Fail. I'm sorry. Fail.
That is a last hot cup of tea.
It makes me see Rue's commentary in a different light. So when they're judging queens and they're telling them about their makeup and talking about their blending and saying, you need to elevate, it's not good enough. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, I don't know if you can elevate. You elevated by having someone else do your face. These queens are doing amazing. Their faces look great. Even when they're not perfect, they're still pretty fucking good. It's like when you watch Simon Cowell judging people for singing, and I don't think he can sing for shit. So I'm like, how qualified are you really? I'm doubting your qualifications, girl.
Very true. Obviously, I'm not going to have as an impassioned speech as that, but I definitely think there have been other issues with Rue's personality, which have definitely become apparent even within latest season of UK Drag Race. This time, after obviously the break that was done within the filming with COVID-19 happening, and the way that Rue reacted to something that was a shop-bought dress, and how that blew up over the internet at the clear amount of hatred that Rue has for H&M dresses. I get that maybe the look wasn't perfect, but the vitriol that was presented to that queen just for having that, and the fact that Rue had talked about how, you know, the way they'd spoke basically was like, oh, why did I bother coming over here if people aren't going to step up? Forgetting that some of these queens in that very episode have been talking about being made homeless, losing their jobs, having to, you know, crash with friends and try and work out what's going to happen, having to spend their life savings while their entire income streams dried up because events stopped.
It was just so fucking rude. So fucking rude. We're in the middle of a pandemic and, you know, these queens have had to go home. They've been sent home. Then they've had to come back at a time when they can't have people come and help them pack up again. They can't have people come to their house to do their fittings for their gowns and stuff like they normally would. They don't have access to a lot of shops because non-essential shops are shut. Where do you think they're going to get their fucking clothes from? I mean, seriously, you know, if they come out with a store-bought dress and they make it look fabulous, that's good enough for me. And yeah, there were other queens who came out there with shop-bought stuff as well. There was someone with, was it an ASOS jacket? And they didn't get read like that. That's just, the vitriol was so uncomfortable.
Definitely. And it makes you wonder whether or not it's somebody has been around and, you know, led the show for so long that they've forgotten what it's like to be a working queen that has to deal with booking their own sets in clubs around the country and having to find their own dresses, find their own makeup, work on that themselves. Where obviously Rue is in a place of privilege where they have a team around them, makeup artist included, as you mentioned.
Yep, and hair. They have a previous contestant dust their hair as well.
It was really, you know, again, really interesting to witness that person in a place of privilege not realizing just how difficult it's been for some queens and reacting like that in such a way was less than comfortable watching, I'll say for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was a real shocking moment. It definitely hit the headlines, you know, it was big, big news just because it was particularly nasty. It went beyond the normal critique into just pure nastiness. And Drag Race should not be a place of hate. Your drag family should not be a place of hate. That's not what it's about.
Yeah. And there's an argument between challenging someone to step up their game and do better and then finding that line of what's just plain abuse to that person. Mm-hmm. And clearly that was one clear example that stood out that you crossed that line.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget that Rue has been guilty of, you know, saying things that are inappropriate before as well. They've said on their Twitter or in, you know, to the media, they've made transphobic comments and then attempted to double down on it when people started calling them out, which is even worse. So not just going, oh shit, I made a mistake, I didn't realise, and apologising, but, you know, trying to really stick with it. Until it became obvious that just wasn't an option.
Was it not also, I don't know if it was, you know, one of those memes that go about that are actually fake, or if it was an actual thing that had happened, but was there not an issue where at one point Rue had talked about Drag Race welcoming people from the trans community? Instead of tweeting out the trans flag, they'd like sent out, I think it was green and yellow and something else, which were definitely not trans colours. I didn't fact check it, so obviously don't take it as gospel, but it was just one of those cases where it's believable enough, given past incidents, that you'd think, did that happen or not? And it was just really interesting to hear that that might have been a thing as well. And I was like, what?
Oh dear. What about judges? We've not dragged the judges yet. It's a drag race. There needs to be more dragging.
I think I only have like one or two comments on other judges. It's mostly you, isn't it?
I mean, where would we be without Michelle Visage? I mean, an absolute staple throughout the existence of Drag Race. No longer with the iconic, delicately put, no longer without the iconic, but still just, I don't know, in some ways, Michelle's quite savage, but I kind of low-key love her.
Yeah, I think there's been maybe one or two points where I've been like, are you off your fucking rocker? I don't agree with that. But other times, the way she puts things, it's like, yes, slay, be fierce. And it's just like, the way she approaches things, it's never felt in an aggressive manner. It's always felt really constructive. And when you see some of the relationships she has with contestants afterwards and how positive and like affirming that is, that's been really nice to see. So it shows that it's not just a paycheck for her. It is something that she is passionate about, making sure that the contestants are giving their all.
Yeah, I mean, I know that sometimes Michelle's comments can come across as quite cutting, but I've also seen that when it's required, she knows the right time to be really human and sympathetic and, you know, realizes that there's something else going on. So when you get those cutting comments, she's just being to the point and giving you something that's actually quite accurate, really, most of the time.
I know I'd appreciate it. I'd be like, don't sugarcoat it, girl. Just tell me, what the fuck did I fuck up so I can do better? So I'd like, yeah, do it, Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
The only other sort of comment I had on the judges was, I remember that in the first couple of seasons, I don't know if it was like up to season 3 or 4, but there was the other judge that was seen as the sort of staple along with Michelle, which was, I think it was Santino Vice. Their comments and like the way they acted around the queens, it always just read as more sleazy and less constructive, which was a thing.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen them for a wee while now on the judges panel, or at least I've not noticed them for a while on the judges panel. I think Ross Matthews seems to have come along more recently in terms of how often he's on. I do like Ross Matthews.
He is quite funny. And there's also, I think it's rotated between Ross and, was it Carson Kressley is the other one?
Oh, yes.
So that those characters have definitely felt more, you know, fun and entertaining and more constructive with the queens. But yeah, I just remember the first couple of seasons with Santino Vice always feeling like some of his comments always just read as more sleazy rather than helpful, which was, ugh.
He's got the ick factor. Yeah. It's not the X factor, it's the ick factor. I mean, despite all of this, I think the main thing to focus on here is actually just the queens themselves, who are the contestants on the show, and the fact that we're getting to see so many different queens that we, you know, wouldn't have heard of otherwise, and appreciating their talents. And they are unbelievably talented. The stuff that they have to do in those challenges, like, I would be voted out in the first episode. I wouldn't even get there. I'd put my audition tape and it'd just go straight into the bin. Next! Thinking like the costume challenges in particular, the ones where you have to like sew a garment in a short amount of time and make it look like it's high couture. Like, you'd be lucky if I could just get a bin bag on me with some holes for my arms and my legs and my head. Let's not forget that. No hole for the head, you just see the arms sticking out.
It's part of the look, it's part of the look, it's okay. I think I would definitely be one of those queens that goes on and it would be like, I don't know how to sew, please somebody help me. I'd just be hoping that there'd be enough that I could just sew on and hope that it looked like a dress and nobody would question it.
Yeah, absolutely. Bin bag is probably as far as I'm going to get with my look. Garbage sauvage. It's couture, darling. I'll just stick some rhinestones on it.
Well, the fact that some of the queens have been able to turn out an actual, you know, good-looking outfit made out of, what is it? There's been balls, there's been made out of wigs, there's been a dress made out of sponges. It's like some of the creativity there. When it, you know, when I was faced with a pile of stuff from any old room in the house, I wouldn't be thinking, oh, I can make that into a fucking dress.
Was it, trying to think, this most recent season in America, season 13 in the US, one of the queens made the most amazing outfit after out of a sleeping bag. And it looked, I mean, it looked incredible. Absolutely incredible. I think it might have been Utica. I would have to fact check that. I might have made that up. One of them made the most amazing gown out of a sleeping bag, and it was just the most beautiful thing. I had no idea it was a sleeping bag until the critique, and when they mentioned what it was, I was like, oh my word, I mean, it's beautiful, it looks like it belongs on a runway.
God, you could be warm all the time just waving that out everywhere.
I mean, can you imagine how hot you'd be if you had to lip sync in that though?
Oh, true. Okay,
sweaty and can only hope there's something nice underneath that you can just unzip it, get out.
I think one of the staples of the show now is the challenge, which is Snatch Game. I think that's definitely been one where you really get to see just how out the box some of the queens think, but also how well they can portray a character but also bring themselves into that, which is really, you know, that's quite a hard task, being your own persona, but then also filtering that through somebody else's persona. It's really interesting. And yeah, there are some bad ones, but there have also been some really amazing personas there.
Mm-hmm. When you think about the range of skills that queens have to have, because you're talking about, you know, being able to do prepared comedy, stand-up comedy, sewing challenges, being able to walk a runway. I mean, you don't traditionally see drag queens as models on a runway. That's not a skill that you would normally expect them to have. And yet you're asking queens to have the full range of all of these things and be able to excel at all of them as well. And music as well, dancing, the works.
Acting.
It's just incredible.
I'm trying to think, is there anything else that we've seen them do other than everything?
I mean, there's been some queens that have brought some amazing talents of their own, like ice skaters and things as well. Who knew that you needed an ice skating drag queen? And yet here we are.
The huge amount of skills needed, and like thinking, oh, would I be able to do, like, I can't sew for shit. I can't dance for shit. You know, I'm like, I can't sing. What am I going to do if I ever go on this show? It would be absolute carnage, I think. And the fact that some of these contestants are just so well-rounded is just absolutely breathtaking, that they have all these skills and are firing on so many cylinders every week.
Do you have a favourite queen out of all of the seasons and all of the countries?
Oh, I don't know. You see, it's hard to pick just one. There's always like a handful, isn't there? You can't just have one. I mean,
I think I have a top three.
Oh, okay. You tell me your top three while I try and narrow down a top three out of the 500 odd people.
I mean, as you said, there are so many good queens. It's really hard to pick favorites, but the one that I love the most is, of course, the one and only Latrice motherfucking Royale. Oh, Latrice Royale is just, I cannot tell you how much I love her. She was fabulous on the show. She's fabulous live. When she was in All Stars, that was stolen from her. Oh, I stopped watching All Stars at that point. I was so angry. Latrice deserves so much more. She is an incredible, incredible queen. And then I would say Manila Luzon, I also particularly enjoyed. The two of them together, they're a fantastic combination. And seeing them live together as well, they just work so well. They're both really entertaining. And then a more recent one, Heidi and Closet, kind of stole my heart a little bit. When she finally came to fruition at the end and really found herself, really enjoy her. She's so much fun to watch. Always makes you laugh with that little whistle in her speech. yeah, really, I do love Heidi in Closet. And I'm glad that she didn't let Rue bully her out of her name.
True.
Like, if that's the name that you're feeling, you go for it.
God, every time, Rue, every time.
But there are so many amazing queens. They're ones that just will stick in your head forever. Vanjie, who's going to forget that exit? I mean, seriously.
Vanjie.
And let's not forget Valentina with her mask, head of the time. Do you want to keep it on or take it off? I'm going to keep it on. Coronavirus!
I'm going to keep it on and stay 2 meters away. If I had to limit myself to a top three, I think in no particular order, one of the queens that definitely stole my heart on their time was Ben de la Creme, also known as Ben de la Christ. just for the fact that, you know, they came in, I think, in their All-Stars season, and they realised they didn't need to sort of play the game, as it were, anymore. And I think everyone remembers the sort of self-sacrifice moment. It was just really interesting to watch a queen who'd come in knowing it's the competition and everything, but then also realising that they don't have to keep playing into that game and just being confident in themselves. And that was really, you know, beautiful to see being presented. I think I'd also have to go with Bianca Del Rio.
Yes.
I'm a dark, sarcastic bitch.
Oh, actually, I forgot about Bianca. She is amazing. She deserves to be bumped up into the top three, which is now top four. She's absolutely brilliant. I love her confidence. I love her dark, witty humor. Fabulous.
Yeah, just that Rolodex of hate and how quick they are and how sharp they are and everything. It's just like, girl.
That's goals. Goals.
Another queen that was just really interesting was, I think, Jinx Monsoon, who just like watching their season and seeing the other queens not taking them seriously, but then also how they were just water off a duck's back. And that's just such an important lesson, I think, that she was spouting every time, just water off a duck's back and not letting problematic characters, or at least problematic characters as the editing gave it, getting to them, which was a really positive message to see as well. And then, and of course, Latrice Royale. I mean, it goes without saying that absolute legend.
Latrice! Yeah, I mean, there are so many queens that I could name. And I'm really bad with names. Actually, I can't name them, but I can think of who they are. Who was the one that did Cher?
Oh, not Morgan Michaels. It was...
Who's their boy name? Chad Michaels?
Chad Michaels.
Chad Michaels. Also, such a talented queen. Honestly, just polished to perfection. Also belongs in the top three, which is now five.
You can count well.
It's getting a bit crowded in here, folks.
Oh,
so many queens.
You can't possibly ever talk about Drag Race without the really persevering Shangela, you know, coming back again and again. And how the absolute heartbreak you felt, like, on that final twist that Rue threw in for everything on that season of All Stars. It was just, oh, Shangela was robbed.
Another queen that was robbed. Yeah, so, I mean, Drag Race has brought so many of these amazing queens to the fore, and that is a real positive. I mean, you know, I doubt I would have heard of most, if any, of them otherwise. So yeah, it's been fantastic for them. There are lots of other drag artists who never get that chance, or they don't want to have that chance. I mean, there are queens who will refuse to put themselves forward for Drag Race because they disagree with, you know, the ethics or with Rue or, you know, with a variety of different things.
Yeah, and I know that one UK drag queen that said that, obviously I don't think they would be going as a contestant, but even just as a judge, I know that Lily Savage has talked about how they would not go on it. They do not agree with what Drag Race presents as drag. And yeah, I'm sure there are many other queens across the world that don't want that opportunity to be involved in this particular show because of how it, you know, presents things or how it asks people to fit into certain molds, or even just some of the problematic characters and or issues that we've sort of touched on in various ways throughout this conversation.
And of course, British drag is traditionally very different from American style drag. You know, it was a very different culture over here for a long, long time. That has been influenced now by the prevalence of Drag Race. But people like Lily Savage or Dame Edma, you know, represent what British drag really was, what it still is in different clubs and things. And yeah, I think there's a risk of losing some of that unique drag that we have here because of the overwhelming overbearance of Drag Race.
Yeah, and at least this season of UK Drag Race, it's definitely felt like the queens more align with the US. Not like, oh, that they feel just like US queens, but they definitely feel that the first season, I felt anyway, was more along the lines of, oh, these are really British queens here, which was quite refreshing to see. But then as we've had the second season now, it feels like there's been a slight shift in how that drag is presented and represented. My main go-to reference in my head anyway is that, oh, there was no bag of chips this season, you know. Bag of chips just felt so British in a way that was just unbelievably lovable. And in this season, it didn't feel like there was that persona as such.
What I did like, though, was that we got to see Scottish queens for the first time. There's a drag scene here. Surprise! And not only did it include Scottish queens, but one of them won.
Suck on that, England.
Not that they were competitive or anything.
No.
It was really nice to have that representation of someone from the Scottish drag community. And apparently they've had lots of comments. I'm going to say a little bit of hate online, people saying that they're putting on the accent, because apparently people don't know what Scottish folks sound like, especially from Glasgow. I loved hearing a Glasgow accent.
I know, it was great hearing both Lawrence Cheney in proper sort of Glaswegian, and then also hearing Ellie Diamond speaking with that sort of Dundonian accent. It was really refreshing, and it was like, oh, I get this, this is fine, instead of, you know, everyone having perfect speaking. Just, yeah, it was really refreshing to hear that Scottish dialect and that Scottish sense of humour during the, I don't remember what mini challenge it was, but they were basically trying to sell cakes. And Lawrence Cheney comes along and goes, it's not called eclairs, it's eclairs. And that just, that had me in stitches, because it's just classic Scottish humour playing on that.
Absolutely. It would be really nice to have more of that in the media, more representation from Scotland, because we exist up here, believe it or not. Hey! And Scottish humour, there is no beating Scottish humour. There really isn't. It's so entertaining. Scottish people are hilarious, apart from maybe me. But I do love Scottish humour, and there should be way more of it on TV. I've not seen anything of the Canadian one. Maybe you could enlighten me. The only thing I heard was that it was not as great as any of the others. Is that true?
I don't know if I'd say that. I mean, it's got a second season coming, so it's clearly done well enough. I think the Canadian version of Drag Race, it was interesting because it gave a former contestant the chance to actually run the show. So it was the first one, the main one that you think about, without Rue behind it, but it was actually Brooklyn Heights that was the sort of middle judge, as it were.
Oh, that's interesting. How did that work?
I think that worked because they were the Canadian queen on their season. And so because they are in Canada, I think it was easier for them to be doing that. And I know that there's certain sort of rules in Canada that a certain percentage of your cast when you're working on things have to actually be Canadian or something. So Brooklyn got to be the sort of key judge with two other judges with them. So that was really interesting to see a former contestant actually being on the judges panel and giving those critiques and helping show the variety of drag artistry in Canada, because Canada's quite a sizable country.
And so did it work well? Did it feel like there was something missing without Rue, or was it successful in its own right enough that that didn't matter?
I think it was successful in its own right enough. I don't think there was definitely something that felt a bit out of place, but I don't know if I would say it was necessarily Rue. I think it was because it was showing queens that I don't really know. And it was a form of drag that was being introduced that I'm not that used to, because obviously when UK Drag Race happens, you're like, well, I live in the UK. I kind of get the humor and all that. And by season 13 of US Drag Race, everyone knows how US, you know, there's a lot of US queens that you've seen. But for the Canadian Drag Race, it was, you were getting people that were native, ethnic backgrounds, as well as your traditional white person coming along. And there was different sensibilities to the different drags that they were bringing. And there was even talk of people coming to terms with being two spirits, which is a Canadian sort of way amongst Indigenous people of talking about sort of non-binary or not third gender that is in sort of Indigenous culture there. So it was really interesting in that sense. But yeah, I think some of the challenges were maybe more skewed to sort of Canadian sensibilities than necessarily US global sensibilities. But it was still really interesting. And I felt it merited its own, you know, it stood on its own two feet as something which was really quite interesting to see and get a different perspective of drag in another part of the world.
That's really nice to hear that, you know, it included discussions of people who are two spirits and things, because I think that it's something that you occasionally hear about, but there's not enough of it talked about, at least over here, because it's not part of the culture in the UK. So, you know, getting that broadcast in a way that makes it a conversation accessible to more people, it's actually really positive. So I'm glad they were able to do that.
Yeah. And then I think it's been announced, but I don't know if when it's being released yet, but I'm sure there's a Drag Race Down Under, which is soon going to be the Australian version. So I don't know who they're going to have on that one.
Oh, what was the Australian queen that they had a few seasons back?
Courtney Act.
I did rather enjoy Courtney Act, I have to say. Love the name. Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see what a Down Under version of Drag Race looks like as well. And hopefully it will showcase a little bit more of what their drag scene looks like compared to the American version as well. So maybe this is the beginning of, you know, more diversity, regional diversity in Drag Race, and being able to see what drag looks like in all these different countries and cultures. Now all we need is Nun Race. Not enough drag nuns on there.
We just need our entire show and we can get sisters from across the world to compete.
Not sure they're not going to get much of a prize here, let's be honest.
Well, I don't know. I think you could go far, Alaska. I believe in you. You've got my vote.
Until it comes to the sewing challenge and I come out with my bin bag couture.
No. If it's going to be Nun Race, it's going to be activities that the sisters would do. So, you know, there's going to be making the dirtiest innuendo, the who can fit the most condoms onto the banana, you know, all that sort of fun. It's not going to be sewing.
You're right. We didn't have to sew any of this. So at this point, I think we've probably said enough, plenty enough about RuPaul's Drag Race. It's a massive topic. We could probably do more episodes on it. We've said enough for one day. All the positives and the negatives, all the things. So let's move on from RuPaul's Drag Race then. What are we going to talk about next time? Let's do something completely different.
So next time, because it would traditionally be the starting of Pride season across Scotland, with back when, remember physical events, when they would happen? I know, right? A lot of events would be taking place across Scotland celebrating Pride. And so we thought it would be quite good to have that memory of what our first Prides were as sisters. And so wanting to talk about that next time and sort of the experiences we got as these fabulous beings in fabulous makeup, darling, serving the community at Pride.
How exciting. So next episode is going to be a story time about our first Prides as sisters. I can't wait. It was probably one of my favorite Prides ever. So I'm going to love next episode. Well, you know, you were there.
Yes. Yes, I was. This is the time where we start going, oh yeah, we both did this together. We both did that together.
This is going to become a theme. One day they're going to discover that we are in fact the same person instead of two separate people. That's why we never see them apart. It's kind of like the opposite of Superman, where you never see them together. You always see us together.
You're giving away the secrets.
We'll be having none of that.
Oh, God. Joan is disapproving again.
Oh, no. Oh, Sister Joan.
So if you enjoyed this episode of Utter Nonsense, please subscribe, like us, comment down below. You can catch us on YouTube, and you can also find us on anywhere you get your podcasts, such as iTunes and Spotify. So subscribe, like, and leave us a comment there as well.
And don't forget to check us out on our other social media channels, which will be linked in the description down below. We did the thing.
We did the thing.
We did the thing. We did the thing. We did the thing. We did the thing. We did the thing.
Can't believe that's become the official closeout anthem.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of Utter Nonsense. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please do subscribe, as new episodes will be released monthly. Also, if you have the time and inclination, it would be great if you could leave us a like and review on whatever podcasting streaming service you're listening to us from, as it really does help boost the show's reach to other people. If you can't wait until the next episode to hear more from Sister Alaska or Sister Babushka, please do follow them on their social media channels, as I'm sure they'd love to hear from you there too. Just a reminder that all the views expressed by anyone on the show today are completely their own and are not meant to be on behalf of any other person or any other organisation. Anyway, I think that's all for the super secret end credits, so I hope you all have a fabulous day wherever you are, and we will speak to you next time.